When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following production is part of the We Be Geeks podcast collective.
From days long ago, from uncharted regions of the universe, comes a legend.
The dream that came through a million years, that lived on through all the tears.
It came here, the Fandom Nexus.
Fabulous secret powers were revealed to our host as he plugged in his microphone.
I have a podcast!
Here he is, your Spider-Pan, Jeremy.
Hello! So we'll go ahead and get started on this, and I might end up standing because I'm going to feel weird sitting up here by myself, but I feel weird most of the time anyway. Yes, and we will show this off. I don't know that it's possible really to get a copy of this book anymore. Here's Dan Vietz. He was one of the co-authors on this here book. He's president of Thank You Walt Disney, which you can find at thankyouwaltdisney.org. Most of you probably already know about the Walt Disney Laugh-O-Gram Studio here in town. If you don't, you're about to learn. If you have, it's probably because you've been to my panels before. Actually, I don't know if I see her. There was a lady, young lady I was speaking to yesterday that we were admiring. Somebody had done these rubber duck drawings out there on the floor. And we were talking some Disney. And she says, yeah, I really like going to the panels. They have this guy that brings in people from Marceline all the time. I says, yeah, unfortunately, I couldn't get, we miscommunicated or something. And I don't have anybody from Marceline. But I said, you got to come meet Dan Vietz. Because this is the first time I've gotten to do a panel with Dan. So he's a fount of information. My goodness, talking to him on the phone, and I got educated on even the rocket, the TWA rocket. I have learned so much stuff. He's a font of information. So we're going to talk about the effect that Kansas City had on Walt and a lot of what they're working on right now to build up the studio into the amazing thing it's going to be. But he's got an awesome documentary that they've made, and we get to get a look at it first. Maybe not. Uh-oh. We're hopeful that it's going to be this great documentary. Technical issues. Uh-oh. But yeah, I was going to read this, but he says it's not quite current. But you sent a long list of all of your credentials. You might have to go through them. So.
Thanks, Jeremy. Thanks to Jeremy for setting us up. We were both kind of surprised just 2 weeks ago, I think, when we actually realized that we were going to be allowed to do this. And so as Jeremy indicates, I am full of it. I am full of information about Walt Disney, at least. And so Jeremy, if you want to jump in with a question or comment at any point, feel free. Otherwise, sure. I will just run on ad infinitum. I had the
makes great- my job easy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I practice law to support my Disney habit. I've been addicted to Disney for about 30 years now. I mean, you know, we all grew up, you know, with Disney, but getting serious and hardcore about really researching Disney's Missouri history got me motivated, and I've focused on that for quite some time now. I had the great good fortune to be invited to work with the Kansas City Star's history writer, Brian Burns, and their movie editor at that time, Bob Butler, on this nice little book. I'm really proud of this book. It's now out of print, but it's frequently on Amazon and eBay, and if you search, you'll find it. And it was almost a limited edition. There are only 5,000 copies of this book that were printed, but it's gotten a lot of circulation. It's gotten a lot of citation by subsequent writers, which always makes me happy and proud. We set out to do this book. We thought, or at least the Star writers thought, we'd just rehash what other writers had published. But in fact, we wound up doing some original scholarship. So, you know, there are some facts in this book which were previously unpublished anywhere else. So I'm especially proud of that. Now, if I could find a volunteer to pass out some flyers here, I've got some information that I think you might find useful and informative. And there's about two volunteers. That's ideal. Yeah, if you could each go down the side aisles, that's great. Thank you so much. I am president of the group called Thank You Walt Disney Incorporated, and we formed about 25 years ago, not-for-profit, 501c3, donations are tax-deductible. We kicked in a few thousand bucks, and each of us, that is, and managed to buy a very significant building. That is the Laugh-O-Gram Studio building where Walt Disney's first professional film studio operated just over 100 years ago. And by the way, the Disney 100 exhibition is coming to Union Station, opening on May 24, and it will be running through at least the end of November. And it's a wonderful thing. I had the good fortune to see it up in Chicago a few weeks ago. And it is the history of the company, not specifically the history of Walt Disney. But my primary focus is on Walt's life, as well as his work, but how his background in Missouri influenced both his films and his theme parks. So let's see here if I can manage to focus. 1 week from today, of course, is St. Patrick's Day. And so I find that even people who consider themselves Disney fans aren't always aware of this great gem of a movie. And I would watch it every St. Patrick's Day if I could get away with it.
I do.
It's really fun. It's a really well done movie. It's exactly how Ireland ought to be. I don't know if it's how Ireland really is, but Sean Connery sings, and I have read that Albert Broccoli actually cast Connery in Dr. No after seeing him in this film. Now, his character is quite away from James Bond, but nonetheless, it's a great movie. It's just full of humor and some scary scenes and some great special effects, some really impressive special effects for the time.
And sound effects you might recognize in the Haunted Mansion when that banshee shows up at the end.
Yes. The banshee is especially scary, as it ought to be. Oh, now my little button's not doing its job. I'm not able to forward. Doggone it. What's the problem here?
We all just enjoying Sean Connery. Plus, you know, his co-star there, she's a cutie.
Janet Munro is wonderful. I wonder if she's related to Caroline Munro. I don't know that she is, but I've always thought that might be likely. Julie, I need a hand here. I am not forwarding.
It's because it's an apple.
I want to thank my lovely assistant here, Professor Julie Plax. thank you. And tonight, of course, tonight is the biggest night of the year in Hollywood, the Academy Awards tonight. And this is Walt Disney at a typical night at the Academy Awards. This is not unusual. He would go home with an armful of Academy Awards. Now, for most people in the movie business, winning one Academy Award is the pinnacle of their career. It's the greatest thing they could ever hope for. Disney won over 30 Academy Awards. No one else in the movie industry has ever approached that record, and it's highly unlikely anyone ever will. Now, what is, there we go. And this is young Walt, the first image taken of him. He was born December 5th, 1901 at 2449 Tripp Avenue in Chicago. That house still stands. It was built by his father, designed by his mother, and it's been in recent years purchased by folks like us here in KC, folks who are preserving and restoring it and eventually hope to open it to the public. This is that house. This is that house as it appeared when Walt lived there. Walt was born there. Roy was born there 8 years earlier. Their parents, Flora and Elias, had moved to Chicago so that Elias could work on the Chicago World's Fair way back in, I guess, 1893. And he was quite a carpenter. He was quite a good builder. They moved, however, in the summer or early spring of 1906, when Walt was 4 years old, they moved to the small north central Missouri town of Marceline. Marceline is a wonderful place. I spend time there every chance I get. Mm-hmm. This is the old train station at Marceline. The new one that's there now was built while, or began to be built while the Disneys lived in Marceline. I often think that might be Walt right there in front of the cowcatcher. And I hope that engine is stationary, if it is. But at any rate, this is a great image. And Walt was a great fan of trains throughout his entire life. That began in Marceline. His uncle, Mike Martin, was an engineer. And Walt lived on a small farm right on the edge of town. He would often jump into the cab with his uncle and ride into town with him in the cab of the steam train. And this is the main street of Marceline, which many of you may know is the inspiration, if not the model, for Main Street USA. And not only Main Street USA in Disneyland, but Main Street USA in Disney World and Paris Disneyland and Tokyo Disneyland and all of the other Disneylands around the globe all echo this Main Street. And today it looks very much like it does here. The buildings in the foreground on both the left and the right still stand largely unaltered. Marceline is a great little town, but Walt only spent 5 years in Marceline. He spent more than 10 years living right here in Kansas City, and that's what a lot of people don't realize. They don't understand that Kansas City really was probably a bigger influence ultimately on Walt even than Marceline. And this is the train station where the Disney family arrived here in the summer of 1911 when Walt was 9 years old. This is a beautiful old Victorian Italianti, I'm told, train station in the West Bottoms. And, of course, the Bottoms flood. So that's why Union Station, the one we know today, was built while the Disneys lived here in Kansas City, opened in 1914, and that old station was demolished at some point. But Walt would have also spent time at today's Union Station. This is a streetcar, of course, and this is the streetcar. I was really thrilled when I found this postcard because if you can read above the front there, 31st Street, that's the street the Disneys lived very near to. The house on Bellefontaine is just a half a block or less from 31st Street. And it's 31st Street where the Laugh-O-Gram Studio stands today, the building that housed the Laugh-O-Gram Studio. So this is not just like the trolleys. This is the trolley that went by the Disney home. Their first home in Kansas City was on 31st Street. And I mean, it was really close to being literally on 31st Street. And Walt's mom said that the trolleys were so close to their front room, she had to keep the curtains pulled or people would just be able to peer right into their house. So they moved to the Bellefontaine home. You may be familiar with 3028 Bellefontaine shortly after that. This home right here, which still stands, it's been modified a little bit, but not substantially. It's a very important historic landmark, as is the garage you can just barely see to the left there. Each of these buildings are separately listed on the National Register of Historic Places, quite appropriately. And this is young Walt, of course, obviously playing tennis or something like that anyway. And Walt and his younger sister, Ruth. There were five siblings in the Disney family, the two older brothers, Raymond and Harold, who didn't seem to be that close to the younger siblings. But Roy and Walt were always very close. And their younger sister, just 2 years younger than Walt, Ruth, likewise, was very close to both Walt and Roy. And that was their mother, Flora, of course. Now, this is Walt in his Abraham Lincoln outfit. Walt's on the right. And in February, most likely of 1915, he took it on himself to memorize the Gettysburg Address and went to school in this outfit his mom helped him put together and recited the address for his class, unbidden, just on his own initiative, which impressed his teacher, who took him to the principal, James Cottingham, who took him around to all the classes at Benton Elementary School, which still stands on Benton Boulevard. It's not labeled Benton School any longer. It was D.A. Holmes School for many years, and now it's condominiums, I believe. But the building is still there, still stands. His pal there on the left is Walt Pfeiffer, a neighbor on Bellefontaine, and the two of them would go out to vaudeville shows and take part in Charlie Chaplin lookalike contests and similar shenanigans. This, of course, is the Abraham Lincoln figure at Disneyland's Opera House. And I believe there's no question that this attraction is descended from the Benton School Abraham Lincoln outfit and performances that Walt did. I think that when the state of Illinois invited him to design a pavilion for the 1963-64 New York World's Fair, he said, yeah, I'll build you the most lifelike robot that has ever existed. And that's exactly what the Imagineers did. This robot just blew people away. Some people thought it really was a real person, but it's not. It has been updated. It has been improved. But essentially, it's still little Walt Disney doing his Benton School performance when you see Abraham Lincoln at the Opera House in Disneyland. And the Hall of Presidents, of course, at Disney World kind of grew out of that same concept. Now, one of the things, Walt took his first art classes at Benton School, and one day his teacher assigned the class to draw pictures of flowers. So Walt drew his flowers with faces on them, and she reprimanded him. He said, flowers do not have faces. Well, they do in the first Technicolor cartoon to win an Academy Award, Flowers and Trees, part of the Silly Symphony series. I think there's no doubt Walt remembered being reprimanded for putting faces on flowers when he designed this Academy Award-winning short film. And he attended his first art classes here in Kansas City at the YMCA building. Now, I think that this is now the home of a Catholic newspaper publication. I can't quite recall the title, but I believe that building still stands. Now, later on, he did attend classes at Kansas City Art Institute as well. So I want to make that clear. He went to art classes at both places. But his father, when they moved from Marceline, his father had tried to be a farmer, but with little success. He came here. He used the money they obtained from selling the farm to purchase the rights to distribute the Kansas City Star and the Kansas City Times. We had two daily newspapers in those days, and Walt hated getting up at various times. The story was 3:30, 4, 5, but very early in the morning to throw those papers 7 days a week. I mean, I'm sure that was miserable. I would hate that. And you may remember in the film Saving Mr. Banks, that one of the pivotal moments of that film is when he talks about his memories of getting up to throw those damn newspapers in Kansas City and somehow persuades P.L. Travers to let him make Mary Poppins in. But this building, of course, is still there today. One of the interesting parallels, I think, is the similarities between the life of Ernest Hemingway and the life of Walt Disney. Both of those men were born in or very near to Chicago within just a couple of years of each other. Hemingway was a couple years older. Both of them moved to Kansas City. Both of them worked for the Kansas City Star in different capacities, but nonetheless worked for the Kansas City Star. Both of them went to Europe during World War One. Actually, Walt was just immediately after the end of World War One. But both of them drove Red Cross ambulances in Europe. And so Walt didn't know how lucky he was that he wasn't there during the fighting, that he wasn't in the trenches, that he wasn't, likely to get killed. But Hemingway, of course, suffered some pretty serious wounds that haunted him for the rest of his life. Walt was just bound and determined to get into the war. And like young boys often are, I didn't realize, I think, how horrible that war was. And so, we have the wonderful National World War One Museum here in Kansas City, and they now have on display an ambulance very much like the one that Walt Disney drove in Europe. And when it was dedicated a few years, maybe several years back now, Walt's daughter Diane and a couple of her daughters came to Kansas City for the dedication of that little Red Cross ambulance. And I had the good fortune to have dinner with Diane and get to spend some quality time with her. And that was magical. This is the, of course, today it's the main facility of the Central Kansas City Public Library. But in Walt's day, this was the First National Bank. And his brother Roy worked there both before and after Roy joined the Navy and served during World War One. I have read that he spent a total of 8 years working as a teller here. And this was the closest he ever came to any formal training in finance. You know, Roy was truly a genius. Walt Disney World was built without borrowing one penny. I mean, Roy Disney really knew finance, and I think he learned what he knew basically right here at the bank. When both of them returned from the war, they both came back to Kansas City, even though their parents had moved to Chicago. And Roy resumed working here at the bank, at least for a short time. And it was there that he made connections that got Walt a job. You know, throughout their lives, Roy was always providing money to Walt. In Marceline, he would give him a dime or a nickel whenever he went into town to buy a toy. And in Kansas City, Roy would get Walt a job. And throughout the rest of their lives, Roy would come up with the money to do what Walt wanted to do. And by himself, Walt might have disappeared. He'd have gone bankrupt again without Roy's help. But the two of them together were dynamic. At any rate, this is a fantastic building. If you've not been in there recently, you should go there. It is a wonderful example of adaptation of an historic building into a new use. And they preserve the character of the structure beautifully. You can go up on the roof and play chess with 3-foot-high wooden chess pieces. And the wonderful Missouri Valley Room is on the top floor of this library building as well. Just a wonderful place to do research. They've got a fantastic postcard collection, and you may notice that many of the images I'm sharing with you and which are in this book are postcards, a really great source of imagery from the turn of the century, turn of the 20th century, that is. This is the Union Pacific Station in Jefferson City. And Walt got a job working on the trains out of out of Union Station, not only the Santa Fe. You'll read some accounts will name a specific railroad, but he didn't work for a specific railroad. He worked for the Van Noy News Agency, and he was what was known as a news butcher, which means he would sell soda, snacks, newspapers, and such on the trains. And so the very first day that he had that job, which he loved, he got to wear an outfit essentially just like the conductor's outfit. And the first day that they worked in that job, he came to Jefferson City's Union Pacific Station, which again still stands there today. But one of the great influences, I think, and I see other people quoting from our book about this, and you know, I try in my book to make it clear, I can't prove absolutely that Electric Park had a big influence on Walt Disney's design of Disneyland, but I believe it's so. Electric Park was a fantastic place near 46th and Paseo. It was called Kansas City's Coney Island, and that was really no exaggeration. It was a big, beautiful, well cared for, landscaped place. And Walt went there without question as many times as he could. Electric Park was just a fantastic amusement park, and you can see many elements which it had in common with Disneyland, and not only being clean and well landscaped, but also a train ran around a major portion of the park. There was a log flume ride. I know Walt wasn't around when Splash Mountain was created, but nonetheless, there are a lot of similarities between Electric Park and Disneyland. This is another shot of the band shell. That arched building in the background was kind of a semi-enclosed band area, and John Philip Sousa's band played there for the entire summer of 1915. So you know this was a big deal. That circular structure in the center, that was where young women clad in gauzy pseudo-Greek outfits would rise with the fountain spraying water all around and colored lights on them, and that was a big attraction at Electric Park as well. The nighttime was when the park really shone, of course, because the 100,000 electric lights, and this is when most people didn't have electricity in their homes. It really was a fantastic thing to see at night. This is the scenic railway. What they mean is roller coaster. That was the term for roller coasters at that time. And here is young Walt in his Red Cross outfit. He had to fudge, you know, forge is such a harsh term. He had to fudge his age by 1 year in order to even get into the Red Cross. But his parents reluctantly went along with that. And he did, in fact, serve in the Red Cross for about 9 months. And that was after spending 9 months, by the way, back up in Chicago. So, but even accounting for those 18 months, of the time that Walt was in Kansas City, even subtracting those, he still spent more than a decade living right here in Kansas City. Well, when he came back you know, he did a couple of short-term jobs, and he saw an ad in the Kansas City Star for the what was called the Kansas City Film Ad Service, also known as the Kansas City Slide Company. That's what the concrete sign behind that one actually says, and we have that sign. We salvaged that sign when this building was destroyed by the University of Missouri, to their shame and regret, I hope. But at any rate, they threw us a bone. They saved the concrete slab that says Kansas City Slide Company, which is right behind the United Film Ad Service sign. And that's Walt on the right pillar there. And he's right next to the boss, Arthur Byrne Cogger, whose grandson, by the way, works with our project here in Kansas City now to save the Laugh-O-Gram building. But you can see they had quite a crew. It was a big operation. And what they created in the earlier days when Walt first came there were 4x4-inch hand-etched and hand-tinted color slides that were used in what were called magic lanterns. And images were shown on the screens at vaudeville houses and in film theaters between acts and between features. And so Mr. Cogger had a thriving business, several states throughout the Midwest. He was one of the largest providers of these slides, but he also knew that animation, that moving pictures were certainly the future. And so he had begun to have his staff produce what you might call primitive stop motion animated advertisements. But Walt and his friend Ub Iwerks, who he had met working at an earlier short-term job, they knew that the animated cartoons they saw in theaters were not made with paper cutout figures. They were drawn, and he wanted to draw animation. And so they checked out two books from the Kansas City Public Library, one of which is still in their collection, by the way, taught themselves to animate drawings and taught the rest of the crew at the Film Ad Service how to animate drawings. And that really was the beginning of Walt's career in the movie business. Years later, well, I'll get to that later. Here's the sign I was talking about. You can actually see the Kansas City Slide Company sign. It's on 3 big-foot-thick slabs of concrete. And I'm so glad we were able to at least save that from this very important historic building. And, of course, this is the public library that Walton visited. This is where the public library was headquartered before that building over on, gosh, what was that street? The 60s architecture building, anyway, between this one and the First National Bank building. But this is a great building, and this has also been repurposed. It's been adapted. It's now the headquarters for the Ozark Life Insurance Company, 10th and Cherry Streets, just to the east of the federal courthouse. You'll see this building, and if you look around the, I think it's the parapet, I'm not sure that's the right term, but just below the gutters there, you see the names of great English literature authors, and the sign that says Kansas City Public Library is still right there. They've done a great job of preserving that building and adapting it. Now, here's the building, the book I just described to you by Edward Muybridge, Animals in Motion. And what better book to learn how to animate mice and dogs and ducks, you know, than Animals in Motion. And the smaller book here is E.G. Lutz's book about the mechanics of animation. So he learned how animals move. Muybridge was the first person to do serious studies of animal and human motion. There's a companion volume, The Human Figure in Motion. It's kind of scandalous, but the Animals in Motion, both of them show high-speed images of exactly how animals and people move as they run, as they trot, as they walk, in various modes of motion. So it was very valuable. This copy is signed by Edward Muybridge, and I remember going there one day, and there's a letter at the Kansas City Public Library Missouri Valley Room from Walt Disney. The library director wrote him and said, "Hey, did you ever happen to visit the library while you lived in Kansas City?" He said, "Oh, yeah, I never had any money because of the late fees on my books from the Kansas City Public Library." And he said, "I checked out 2 books there that I used to learn to animate drawings." And so that's not the original copy of the Lutz book, but it is absolutely the original copy of the Muybridge book, which luckily has been rebound. It's not the original binding, but that's the original copy because it's stamped clearly, received by the Kansas City Public Library, September 17, 1907. So several years before Walt checked it out.
Is that where the stretch and pull technique would have been, or would that be more of a realistic style animation?
This was realistic. I mean, the animals were actually photographed here. I think he exaggerated, and his artists, you know, exaggerated those motions. Yeah, there you go. What is that date? Can you read that? September 17? Maybe 1917. But at any rate.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yes, and yeah, even better, because that's closer to, but still well before the time when Walt checked that book out. It, when you saw it in the photo a moment ago, that's at the Gene Autry Museum at Griffith Park in Los Angeles. And I was fortunate to be able to help put them together, the library and the Gene Autry Museum, so that those books from the Kansas City Public Library were exhibited. And I'll tell you, this is a peak experience. Because I had done that, I got to go to the opening reception for the exhibit, which was Walt Disney and the West. And they had to stretch to make some connections. But I got to go to the opening reception the night before the exhibit opened. And at the table right next to us is Michael Eisner, Roy E. Disney, their wives. Just an amazing group of Disney executives. It was a wonderful night. This is a rare image. This, of course, is a real photo postcard, and they're generally rarer, much rarer than the other ones. EH Iwerks. This is probably Ub Iwerks in the center. His father was a photographer before he ran away and abandoned his family. But I was just so thrilled when I found this Iwerks postcard. As you know, as I assume many of you know, Ub Iwerks was a genius at photography. He was probably the single greatest animator of the 20s and 30s, and won Oscars later in his life, in particular for Mary Poppins in 1964 for his innovations in camera technology. So you can see where that came from. Now here you see the Kansas City Slide Company on a bad day. Silver nitrate film is extremely flammable. It would just spontaneously combust, and that's what all movies were made on in the old days, with silver nitrate film. Mr. Cogger was smart enough to build vaults into his building so that these silver nitrate films would be isolated from each other, and so that a fire in one chamber would not burn down the entire building. And indeed, the building survived. You can see a lot of people watching that fire. You know, fire was big entertainment in those days, and probably still today for that matter, but it did survive. Now, this is Walt on the left, second from the left, with the pipe in his mouth. Walt Disney working in that same building, working for Mr. Cogger. And these are the slides they made there. I've accumulated a few dozen of these now. And they're neat images because they're large enough you can actually see the image without blowing it up or projecting it. But they project beautifully. And they, as I say, they were hand-etched. They were color-tinted by hand, and they were really pretty cool. Again, here's the sign that we have. Here's Mr. Cogger, not looking that jolly here, but everybody who worked for this guy loved him. It was just amazing how this guy could inspire such loyalty among his employees. Well, Walt, after he'd worked for Mr. Cogger for a couple of years, figured it was time to go out on his own. And he found space in this building, which was a brand new building at that time. We're talking about May of 1921. He incorporated Laugh-O-Gram Films. The records are still in the Secretary of State's office. He found space on the second floor at the west end of this building, and that's where the Laugh-O-Gram studio operated for a little less than 2 years. But the work he did there was very important. It set the pattern, really, for his entire career in film. The greatest filmmaker who ever lived, by the way, Leonard Maltin, who I think is the world's greatest film historian and critic. Leonard Maltin said of Walt Disney that he was the most successful and influential producer in the history of movie making. Now, that's no small compliment. You know, that is a pretty sweeping statement, but it is supported not only by Walt's winning more than 30 Academy Awards, but also by the fact that he and Roy built a studio and held on to it. And that's not true of anyone else in Hollywood. Mayer didn't manage to hold on to MGM. The Warner Brothers didn't manage to hold on to Warner Brothers, you know, but the Disney brothers held on to that studio. They did have to, you know, sell stock, but they ran the show. And in many ways, that statement by Maltin is absolutely true. And it grew out of the activity in this building. Now, what's also important to understand is that while he was here, he not only worked there, he lived there. He said, I don't need an apartment. I work all the time anyway. I'm just going to sleep in the Laugh-O-Gram studio. And while he was there, he said in several interviews in the early 30s, he would hear mice come out after he'd gone to bed. He said he slept on a pile of canvas in the studio, and they had wire waste baskets like this one. This one, by the way, is at the Frontierland station at Paris Disneyland. But I saw that wire waste basket, and I thought, I'm going to take a picture of that for my lectures. And so you can see in those old time wire waste baskets were wide open, and a mouse could easily get in and out of that waste basket. And he said the mice would come out and take the crumbs from his employees' lunches out of there. And so he started feeding them. He started putting out bread and cheese for the mice. And then he said one little mouse was braver than the others, and he managed to tame that mouse and kept that mouse as his pet. The mouse would play on his drawing board and at various times lived in a drawer of his desk or in a small cage or just ran free. And when Walt left Kansas City, he made a point of taking that mouse to a place where he thought he would be safe. He said, out in the country, I suspect Swope Park, because Walt and his crew often went out to Swope Park. But he took him to a place where he hoped that little mouse would be safe and would survive. And so we probably still have the progenitors of that little mouse here in Kansas City today.
And that's why I say Mickey Mouse was a Kansas City native.
That's
right. Was Mickey.
That's right. Now here's a shot of the interior of the studio. Those posters do not exist. I mean, at least no one knows where any of those posters exist. I'm sure they're very small print runs, but those are two examples, and we've had them reproduced. By the way, they are available reproductions, which have been colorized by the Kansas City Art Institute. They're for sale on the thankyouwaltdisney.org website, or they will be very soon if they're not, but I think you can get them there now. There's also at least one other of those posters that we're fortunate was photographed, and so we have at least three of the Laugh-O-Gram cartoon one-sheet posters. And we're lucky we have five now of the Laugh-O-Gram cartoons, the one-reel black-and-white silent cartoons made by Disney and his crew right here in Kansas City. You can see above it's a faux mantle, a faux fireplace on the right, a little dark plaque that says South Central Business Association. Well, that was kind of like the Chamber of Commerce for the South Central part of Kansas City. And Walt obviously made sure that Laugh-O-Gram was a member of that association. We are meticulously reproducing this image, this office arrangement, that is, for our building, when we get it fully restored. Those rooms that Walt occupied, we're going to make them as nearly as we can to the way they were when Walt was there. The stock characters in his Laugh-O-Gram cartoons included this little girl, this little boy. They were unnamed, as was the dog, but the cat was Julius. Julius Katz is the alleged owner. Has anybody here been to Disney's California Adventure? Yeah, of course. In California, the park on the south of Disneyland now, Disney's California Adventure, when you walk in there, as you're walking in on the right-hand side is Julius Katz, I think it's Clothiers. Well, that's a reference, obviously, to Julius the cat from the Laugh-O-Gram cartoons. There's also another reference in Toontown. In Toontown, there's a Laugh-O-Gram Films window, a reel of fun, which is a byline that Disney used. This is the condition of our building when I first began to explore it. Perhaps some would call it trespassing, but at any rate, you can see what had happened is the roof had collapsed in large pieces. Large parts of the roof had collapsed in to the second floor, and parts of the second floor had collapsed into the first floor. So, I mean, it was very sad. It was, a great challenge. Now, some parts of the building were better preserved than this one, but it was in bad shape, and it was about to be demolished. And I went to the owners, an elderly couple, who they were well aware of the history of the building. They hoped they could restore it and it would be their grandchildren's inheritance. But the city said, if you don't restore it now, we're going to tear it down. So it was listed to be demolished. They were motivated sellers. I had contacts with them before and said, you want to sell this building? And they said, oh, no. And then they said, well, yeah, we do. And so we got a good deal on this old building. And we took the risk the city would go ahead and tear it down and bill us for hauling it away to the dump. But fortunately, that did not happen. Mayor Emanuel Cleaver deserves a lot of credit for seeing that that did not happen. And he also deserves all the credit for getting us $2 million last year to help bring this restoration into reality. So Emanuel Cleaver is a great man, and I want to make sure I acknowledge that. I also want to acknowledge Scott Biederstadt. Scott, are you in the room? It just crossed my mind. I promised Scott I would urge you all to visit his booth, which I think is 642. In one message, he said 624, but I think he meant 642. Scott has been a great supporter of Thank You, Walt Disney, by donating his artwork, his time, and his considerable talent. Check out his booth on Artists Alley, Scott Biederstadt. Well, one reason the city wanted to tear this down is because that portion of the wall that's missing, the front wall of our building, was bowing outward, and they were concerned that it was going to fall on pedestrians. And so we had to, and this was 20 years ago at least, pour 3-ton cubes of concrete onto the sidewalk. I didn't do this, of course, but we paid people to pour 3-ton cubes of concrete on the sidewalk and run flying buttresses up to the walls to keep them from collapsing while we disassembled and then reassembled with the same bricks this portion of the wall that's missing in this photograph. So it took a lot of work to bring that building back from the edge and save at least the shell of that building. We put a new roof on it. We're probably going to have to put another new roof on it soon. Some people believe that Joan Crawford was a model for Disney. They both were here in Kansas City at the same time. There's no doubt of that. I'm not certain that's true, but I am certain that Joan, known then as Billy Casson, spent at least one semester at Stevens College in Columbia after growing up largely here in Kansas City. And Joan has gotten a bad rap. She is not Mommy Dearest. She was probably the greatest actress in the history of Hollywood, certainly in terms of her longevity, going from silent films all the way up through the early 70s. She was making movies. She won an Oscar for Mildred Pierce, well-deserved Oscar, but she stayed home that night. She claimed she was ill, so she made her acceptance speech from her bed at her home. But she grew up in worse circumstances than Walt did. I mean, she was dirt poor, lived in the back of a little laundry that her mother ran, which was right across the street from the federal courthouse again, right very near that public library location I showed you a few moments ago. Well, one of the projects Walt did at Laugh-O-Gram was to make what we would call maybe a music video today. He made a film that was designed to have the music for this song played behind it. This was published by the local music publisher here in town, a large publishing house. Here's Walt in the rumble seat of a rented car and the Laugh-O-Gram Films camera right there behind him on the tripod. They would go around town and shoot pictures of people and then say, come see yourself on the screen at the ISIS Theater tonight and entice people to patronize the ISIS, which no longer stands but was just a half a block from the Laugh-O-Gram building for many, many years. We have a camera, by the way, that's called a universal camera and was used in Hollywood films for many years, mainly for location shooting. And we acquired one from right here in Kansas City. Probably not that one, but one almost identical. Well, Walt's last project at Laugh-O-Gram, his last project here in Kansas City, was to make a film that he hoped would save his struggling little studio. So this is him in his own film portraying himself, essentially, a struggling young artist trying to come up with an idea to save his studio. And the idea he came up with was to have this little girl who he met at the Cogger Slide Company. She was her mom was a stage mom. She, you know, Virginia seemed to think that she did all these things on her own when she was 4 years old. But you know better than that. She was a great lady, though, and a good friend of mine. I was very lucky to get to know Virginia Davis in her late 80s and 90s. And she was sharp as a tack and always very funny. So she starred in these films that Walt made in Hollywood. The first films he made in Hollywood were based on the pilot episode he made here in Kansas City. And the major distributor of animated films in the world was a woman named Margaret Winkler in New Jersey. All the movie industry, of course, was moving from New York and New Jersey to the West Coast, but no one had begun to make animated films on the West Coast until Walt went out there with his one reel of film in his suitcase, that Virginia Davis, Alice's Wonderland, it was called. And he got a contract with Mrs. Winkler. These were kind of loosely based on the Little Rascals, the Our Gang comedies. But the trick was that she would either go to sleep or get conked on the head or inhale laughing gas. Something would happen to make her go into cartoon land, where she would, still as a live action character, interact with a cartoon environment and cartoon characters. She also was she flew across the convention hall. That was on Alice Barney Plaza. This is a big, wonderful building here where national political conventions and other big gatherings were held. And Virginia, as a little girl, flew across the top of that dressed as a bird of paradise on New Year's Eve one night. Here's Virginia. Leonard Maltin really deserves credit for bringing her back to public attention. He was surprised himself to learn that she was still around. And because she had worked with Disney at such a young age, she was able to still be with us until really just the last decade. I was very fortunate to be able to attend the Disney Legend Award on the Disney Studio grounds. This is the building that Eisner built, the Seven Dwarfs building, and the what's it called, the Courtyard of the Legends is where you're looking here. And this, I can tell you, this was on October 16, 1998, the 75th anniversary of the founding of the Walt Disney Company. And so it was a big day there at the studio. I was out there for a Disney convention. Virginia was out there to get the Legend Award on that day. And I say to Virginia, "Virginia, do you need a date? Do you need an escort for the Legends Award?" She says, "Well, yeah, Dan, I do need a date. You want to be my date?" I says, "Yes, I do." And so I managed to get into this event. And there was only a couple hundred Disney Company employees that got to go to this thing. But it was a fantastic gathering. All the legends, all of the people who had received the Legend Award, almost all of them were there that day. I mean, you know, the Sherman brothers, of course, Dick Van Dyke, Davy Crockett, Fess Parker, Mrs. Banks from she just passed away, Glynis Johns from Mary Poppins, and the peak experience, Annette Funicello, in a wheelchair, but nonetheless in a really good mood that day. And it was such a thrill for me to meet Annette Funicello, and all the other folks that day. I talked to Dick Van Dyke. I said, "Dick, I'm from Missouri, where you were born." He says, "Well, yeah, that's right. I don't remember it, but I was born there." But at any rate, and he's still with us, of course. That's amazing. 96 or 97 now, I think. But the Legend Award was so cool. So Eisner goes up there and introduces Roy E. Disney. And Roy E. Disney, and they were on good terms back then, tells the history of the beginning of the company, what I've just told you about little Virginia Davis and his father and his uncle, and how little Virginia really was the beginning of the Walt Disney Company in Hollywood, at least. And then Virginia comes up to the podium, and she walks up there, and she paused, and people were just on the edge of their seat waiting to hear what she would say. And she finally says, "Well, it's about time, 75 years, finally I'm getting an award from the Walt Disney Company." And she was just so funny. And so her hands are in the concrete there now on the Legends Plaza. And that was quite a day. Oh yeah, here's Virginia. I wish I'd had a telephoto lens, but it was an amazing day. An amazing day. So, of course, the 100th anniversary of the Disney Company was just last October, 1923 to 2023. And the 100-year exhibit, of course, is coming to Union Station on May 24. And we're lucky to have that. And to have it in Union Station is especially cool. I went to see that exhibit up in Chicago, and it was in a shabby little place in an out-of-the-way location. I mean, I shouldn't say that, but it was nowhere near as cool as Union Station. Let's see, I'm probably going the wrong way here. Oh, yeah, there's a sheriff's dock. When Walt couldn't actually pay his employees, much like Michael Eisner got shares of stock in the company, he would give them shares of stock, but they turned out to be worthless. Now, not worthless if you had that certificate. It's worth many thousands, not because of its intrinsic value, but as a collector's item, of course. Now, here's Walt on the roof of our building. And because of the pattern of the capstones there in the foreground, you can even locate exactly where he's standing, about about to clobber one of his employees with a 45 automatic, while I think it's Ub is behind this pseudo camera. From what I've read, it's not really a real camera. But how they got this angle is still a mystery, because there's no building right there. They didn't have a crane. They didn't have a helicopter. They sure didn't have a drone. But somehow they got this camera angle. Well, here I was struck by this. Horatio Alger, of course, has come into some disrepute in recent years, but he is the classic example. He wrote story after story about how young boys, I think it was always boys, would make good. Poor boys would, by pluck and luck, would make their fortune. Well, here's only an Irish boy, Walt Disney, the Irish boy on the steps of, probably not really, but like he was at Union Station with his cardboard suitcase. He said he had a mismatched suit. And I saw this image. I thought, damn, that is exactly what Walt described himself as, leaving Kansas City in the late summer of 1923, going all the way on the Santa Fe to Hollywood, to Los Angeles. And that's what he did. These red dots here are Santa Fe hotels. They're Fred Harvey hotels and restaurants. Marceline had a Fred Harvey lunchroom, which still stands there, by the way. And it's interesting how Walt's life parallels the route of the Santa Fe Railway. They both start up in Chicago. They both go through Marceline. They both go through Kansas City. And then they both go on the southern route there, right out to Los Angeles. Of course, from Union Station, this is the dedication of the Liberty Memorial, not the final, but the groundbreaking for the Liberty Memorial. An incredible crowd. Walt was hired by a Hollywood studio to take film from an airplane of the crowd that day. It was a much happier day than the Chiefs parade, unfortunately, turned out to be. This is where Roy lived. He was staying at this Veterans Hospital in Sawtelle, a suburb of Los Angeles, recovering from tuberculosis, which he picked up during the war. And Walt goes out there, and Walt's, of course, not living at the VA hospital. But when he gets a letter from Margaret Winkler saying, "I'm offering you a contract to make those Alice comedies," he ran over to the Veterans Hospital, and Roy was there in his bed in one of the wings of the hospital, and he's yelling, "Roy, Roy, we've got a contract. We're in the movie business." And Roy got up and walked out of there and never went back. I mean, that's the literal truth. Now, I don't know if that was the reason, but he was recovered sufficiently, at least, to leave the hospital. And the two of them started making movies. I mean, just the two of them. 1937, of course, was a landmark. And at the end of 1937, Walt produced the first successful feature-length animated film, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, certainly one of, if not the greatest animated film ever made. These slides are a little out of order, but this was the first film that Walt and Roy made in Hollywood with young Virginia Davis. Walt convinced her parents to move to Hollywood so that she could appear in these little one-reel films. I mean, she wasn't making that much money, but her parents wanted her to be in the movies, and she was. By the way, she appeared in MGM musicals, in particular, the Harvey Girls, a beautiful color MGM musical, won the Academy Award for Best Song for the song, The Atchison, to Topeka and the Santa Fe. That's not actually the name of the railroad, but it's close. And so Virginia had quite a career. She was an amazing woman. Now, this is the other important thing, other than the inspiration for Mickey Mouse coming out of the Laugh-O-Gram studio. These are guys that followed Walt Disney to Hollywood, and he needed them because nobody else was making animation in Hollywood. When he got a foothold, when he realized that he could make movies and make money making movies, he called on his friends from Kansas City. So this is Walker Harmon, Ub Iwerks, what's the other Harmon brothers? Hugh Harmon, and Rudy Ising, and it's Friz Freleng from Warner Brothers primarily, but he was a Kansas Cityan who came out to join Walt Disney, and of course Roy, Walt's brother. And it's not Virginia. That's one of the, there were two or three other little girls who played Virginia, who played Alice in the later films. But I'm out of time, so yeah. I'm going to skip through a few things here. Hallmark is the longest standing, Hallmark and Disney, the longest standing licensing agreement in the movie industry. When Walt came to Kansas City and he had to throw those newspapers. He had to throw them no matter what the weather was like. It could be storming, it could be a blizzard, and he still had to throw those papers. He said that he went out in blizzards and walked through snowdrifts taller than he was. Well, here is an image of little Walt Disney walking through those snowdrifts taller than he was. And here's a little memento at the Missouri Valley Room that Walt signed off on, a little memorial of his visit back to Benton School in 1944, I believe it was. And he gave to his old friends at the South Central Business Association these little hand-painted Dumbo figurines. Dumbo was just coming out then. And this is Mr. Cogger visiting Ub and Walt at the Disney Studios. And they had a big gathering at the Roosevelt Hotel for Mr. Cogger, all the Kansas Cityans who had worked with him here. If I could get my slides to go better, I could show you this group of people. But we're just about out of time anyway.
And I want to make sure we get everybody to visit the website, thankyouwaltdisney.org. You can become a donor to help restore the building and build it into a bit of an animation museum, kind of a partial studio. You want to be able to educate people, I think, at one point. Also, of course, you can find me, neverlandpodcast.com, although I've renamed the podcast to The Fandom Nexus. So if you go looking for the show, it'll be The Fandom Nexus. But you can find all the links at neverlandpodcast.com. Of course, we have YouTube and everything else.
And I'll be glad to talk to anybody right now. Thank you all very much.
And even on Instagram at The Spider Pan, which most people know me as The Spider Pan. I didn't get a chance to selfie with everybody, but we can pose up here.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.